As promised, our next guest is the senior advisor to presidential envoy Paul Bremer, spokesman for the Coalition Provisional Authority, and joins us from Iraq again today on Hot Talk. We're pleased to have him back, Dan Senior, on Hot Talk. Dan, how are you?
Good. Good to be with you.
Good. Thanks for the time today. I don't know how closely you're following news coverage in the United States of what's happening on the ground in Iraq, but there is this perception that's being put forward by the media that things are somewhat out of control in Iraq. That's erroneous, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. We've got serious problems, but they are limited in pockets of the country, small pockets of the country. Some of the areas where there were serious confrontations have since been put down. Other areas we still have work to do, but again, just a country of over 25 million, we've got well over 95% of the population is returning to normalcy. The country is by and large at peace. We have these small pockets in Fallujah and Fallujah and Najaf and a couple of other areas that we've got to deal with, and we are.
Are the numbers increasing in the Shiite revolt?
No, and I think it's a mistake to characterize it as a Shia revolt. The Shia represent over 60% of this country. So, well over 15 million Iraqis are Shia. We've got a few thousand who are organizing in Muqtada al-Sadr's militia and engaging in violence. But the overwhelming majority of Iraqis, as I said, are at peace and returning to normalcy. Most Shia have nothing to do with this revolt.
There are also some stories that seem to insinuate that the level of coordination between the Shia and the Sunnis is increasing. Is that accurate?
I've seen similar reports about lines of communication being established, but again, there just doesn't seem to be that much there. What we're seeing are isolated areas, pockets, if you will, of activity, and there doesn't seem to be sort of nationwide coordination, and certainly the problem we're dealing with in Fallujah is a distinctly different problem from what we're dealing in the southern part of the country. But they do have some things in common, and that is they both want to set Iraq off its path to sovereignty on June 30th. They both want to set Iraq off its path to democracy. Whether the folks in Fallujah who were formerly tied with Saddam Hussein's regime in some way, shape, or form, they certainly want to turn the clock back on Iraq and turn it back to a different era, an era of mass graves and torture chambers and rape rooms and mukhabarat, secret agents knocking on your door in the middle of the night and chemical attacks. That's their vision of Iraq. And so they're trying to throw things off course for their own reasons. And the folks in the south are trying to engage. And again, a small group, a few thousand of Sadr's militia, are trying to use mob violence to attain power, which they know they could never attain in an election.
As I'm sure you're not surprised, this has been the case from the start. There's a whole lot of Monday morning quarterbacking going on. In one example of that, there's been some criticism of the coalition and U.S. forces to say we never should have given up control of some of these cities to the Iraqis. Explain how that process played out, where in some places the U.S. sort of took a back seat in control of some of these cities.
Well, what we did was as we get closer and closer to June 30th, we've been handing over more and more operational authority for the running of the government, both the local level, or the provincial level, and the national level, to Iraqis. We're going to continue to do so. It's the right thing to do, because the more we politically empower Iraqis, the more we isolate the terrorists and the extremists and the former Ba'athists. We have to politically empower them, we have to economically empower them, but it has to be a dual-track strategy, and we have to also continue to go on the offense on the military front. And so while security forces may not have been aggressive in certain parts of the country, they've still been visible, and they've still had a presence. And they have always been in a position to step forward when they need to, and now in certain parts of the country they need to. But again, we're talking about a few thousand people who are causing some disruptions. We've got well over 100,000 troops on the ground. The American military has faced bigger problems before. It's an important fight, but it's one that they can win.
On the Monday morning quarterback line, did we wait too long to get aggressive in Fallujah? We talked to some soldiers that have recently returned to our part of the country who said, boy, it's a bad time because Fallujah has been, sort of building for some time, and we're happy to see that they're taking action. Some would say it took too long. What do you say in response to that?
I'm not a military planner. I'd leave that to my colleagues in the military to make that sort of assessment. But I would say that General Kimmett, my colleague, has been quite clear that we would move in Fallujah at a time of our choosing, on our terms. The response would be appropriate, but certainly overwhelming and precise. And I think all those boxes are being checked.
You know, you put it into perspective for us quite well in as far as the numbers and the difference to what the reality on the ground versus the reporting. Given what you've told us about it being a few thousand, how much of that fighting or this unrest is related to the fact that we're cracking down on this radical cleric, this El Sadar? How much of what we're facing right now is a direct result of the fact that the arrest warrant's been issued for him, and you're looking, you know, you shut down his newspaper, you took down one of his deputies. How much of this is related to that?
Well, Sadar has been a problem for a while. He's been inciting violence for a while. He's been rallying his troops for a while. And we had to confront him. Now that we've confronted him, he's obviously responding. But it's not just us who are confronting him. An Iraqi investigative judge is the one who issued the arrest warrant against Sadar. It's Iraqi police that are detaining his deputy. Iraqis want to see justice. Iraqis want to see rule of law prevail in this country. And Mr. Sadar has been involved with a couple of brutal murders, and he's got to be held to account.
Let's talk a little bit about June 30th. There's been some talk about the turnover deadline. And you've made the comment something to the effect that it's not like a wand will be waved on June 30th. You know, everybody thinks that a switch is flipped on June 30th. What will happen on June 30th?
What will happen on June 30th is Ambassador Bremer will get on a plane and go home, and he'll hand over political authority, political sovereignty to the Iraqi people. They will have control of their political future. But the American military will still be here, and the American military will still have a substantial role in preserving a safe and secure environment in Iraq and protecting certainly against external threats. We will have the largest U.S. embassy here in the world, several thousand employees. We will be deploying close to $20 billion, over two times the country's current GDP. We will have tremendous leverage in this country post June 30th. We will have a very large role. Iraqis will have control of their political future, but the Americans and many coalition countries will still have a large role here.
And who will we take our orders from? I mean, who technically will I assume at that point then are there on the invitation of then the Iraqi government as far as our military is concerned?
Yeah, that'll be something to be worked out. Right now, under UN Security Council Resolution 1511, we are authorized to head up a multinational force here, and that goes beyond June 30th. It goes on through when there is a directly elected democratic government here, which is at least January 2005. But there may be a new Security Council resolution that addresses this particular issue going forward, and it certainly will be also the basis of discussions with the future Iraqi government. But I think it's important, Scott, to keep in mind that, you know, majority of Iraqis want U.S. security forces here. They don't like the notion of an occupation, which is understandable. We don't like to be occupiers. It's not a pretty or nice thing to be or to be on the receiving end of. But if you ask Iraqis, the overwhelming majority of them still want the American security forces to have a presence here because they're nervous that the security situation would deteriorate if we were to depart. So I don't think the issue of American security presence here is really ever going to be a source of contention between the Americans and any future Iraqi government.
You know, you and I have talked about this before, that just from about the time the deadline of June 30th was set for the handover of Iraqis to take more control of their country again, there's been people just desperately wanting you to admit that, you know, it's actually going to have to be July 1 or July 5 or July 31st or whatever. Despite what's happened here, and you put that into perspective for us again, but the recent violence here and the uprisings that are going on, is there anything that threatens the June 30th deadline or suggests that it might be moved back?
No, in fact, I think it would be a mistake. We have made a commitment to the Iraqi people that we would hand over political sovereignty on June 30th. And we're doing many things in this current mission here. One of them is gaining credibility in this part of the world. And I think that credibility would suffer greatly if the first major promise we made to the Iraqi people were compromised.
And
we've got to stick to it.
Wasn't that deadline set in concert with the Iraqis? In other words, this wasn't pulled out of thin air?
Yes, absolutely. It was actually at their request.
Yeah, some have suggested that it was set because of the political calendar back in the States, but
No. That's just factually incorrect. We reached the June 30th deadline in consultations with the Iraqi political leaders.
Final question for you, Dan. Much has been made, and we touched on this earlier, of the radical anti-U.S. cleric, the El Sadar, but another cleric that has not received as much attention recently, the Shia cleric, El Sistani, I believe, has called for an end to the violence. That's not been widely reported, but his actions have actually been helpful in this particular situation, haven't they?
Absolutely, because Ayatollah Sistani, who comes from a great tradition in Iraq, a long history, represents millions and millions and millions of Iraqis, has a, if you listen to his statements, has a very similar vision for Iraq, not to ours, which is a sovereign democratic Iraq, at peace with itself, at peace with its neighbors, at peace with the world, and he probably doesn't want to see his vision for Iraq challenged by a group of thugs.
Dan Senior, Senior Advisor to Presidential Envoy Paul Bremer, Administrator of the Coalition Provisional Authority from Iraq this morning on the very latest on what's happening on the ground there. Dan, always good to catch up with you. We appreciate breaking through some of the unfortunate coverage that's happening on this and getting people the facts, and you help us do that, so thanks a ton.
Good to be with you. Look forward to coming back again.
All right, take care.